show with you. You've got the first half hour. Welcome to Wild Horse and Burro Radio, an educational outreach program of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. The format of our show is going to be a little bit different than usual today. We've allotted more time for today's show to accommodate all of our guests and allow time for you to call in with questions. So today's show will be about an hour and a half long. You're welcome to call in with questions, and I'll make an announcement or two during the show to let you know when it's a good time to call in. I'm going to introduce all of our guests at the beginning, but Ginger will be our guest during the first half hour of the show by herself, and then our other guests will be joining us after that. I had originally planned just to have Ginger on today, and then realizing the dire situation for our horses, wild horses and burros this coming week, Ginger generously agreed to share the show this time, and so anyhow, I'm going to introduce all of our guests, and then as right now, and then some of them will be calling in. Well, they'll be calling in after half an hour. As you know, our first guest tonight is Ginger Catherines, founder and executive director of the Cloud Foundation, and member of the BLM's National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board. The Cloud Foundation is dedicated to preventing the extinction of clouds heard through education, media events, and public involvement, and also to protect all other wild horse herds on public lands. We also have John Holland, president of Equine Welfare Alliance. Equine Welfare Alliance and its members are involved in a grassroots effort dedicated to ending the slaughter of American horses and the preservation and protection of our wild horses and burros on public lands. Katie Kraska is the equine lobbyist for ASPCA. The American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals was the first humane society to be established in North America and is one of the largest in the world. Corey Golden, the advocacy coordinator for Return to Freedom, will be on. Again, he was on last week, but he's generously said he'd come back on tonight. Return to Freedom Return to Freedom is dedicated to preserving the freedom, diversity, and habitat of America's wild horses and burros through sanctuary, education, advocacy, and conservation. And we also have, as the caboose on the show, R.T. Fitch, president of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. And Wild Horse Freedom Federation is dedicated to putting people between wild equines and extinction. Okay, so we have Ginger on first today. Welcome to the show, Ginger.
Thanks, Debbie. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Can you tell our listeners about this order for all wild horses and burros currently in short-term holding facilities to be categorized by weight and age?
Well, I'll tell you what I know based on this not being a direct conversation with me. Our office was contacted on June 30th, and Ann Evans and I were actually in the Pryor Mountains when a caller called our office and spoke with our operations manager, Jesse Daly. And this person identified themselves as a part-time BLM employee who had heard a directive from Secretary of the Interior Zinke's office to Marcy Todd, who's the head of the Nevada BLM. And the directive that was coming down from the Secretary's office was to request all documentation of horses in holding over the age of 5 years old, and that this information then was to be transferred to the BLM's Director of Transportation. The caller was concerned that the horses may be being prepped for removal from holding facilities, and they felt in the conversation with Jesse that this could be imminent. In other words, within weeks.
Yeah. We're all very concerned about that. This is huge. This is, to my knowledge, nothing like this has ever happened before. No order like this has ever been, directive has ever been given.
I've done. Yeah. I think there should be, if BLM is doing their due diligence, which of course is questionable, there already should be documentation of every horse in holding. There should be those kind of records kept as a matter of just of habit of doing this, but perhaps they don't even know what's there currently.
Well,
and that's possible, I guess. The caller said something about the lesser known or the smaller facilities, which would be not Palomino Valley, which is the national holding facility outside Reno. And it certainly wouldn't be Canyon City, which is near my ranch where I'm calling from right now.
It could be Elm Creek. Elm
Creek is in Nebraska. It's smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Could be Litchfield, which is in Northern California. Could be Ridgecrest in California. Could be Delta in Utah.
Burns.
Could be Axtell
in
Utah.
In Oregon.
The Burns Corrals, the Rock Springs Corrals. I think that anybody who lives near these facilities should physically go and visit. Now, with the facility in Oregon, the Burns Corrals, that's a facility that's open to the public, and you can tour that facility.
Mm-hmm.
I think what needs to happen, if they're going to move horses quickly, I think we need to have some kind of a record, a visual record, if people can take pictures of facilities that are near them and can get into these facilities, just for us to have a visual record, don't you, Deb, of a rough count
Absolutely.
Of how many horses are in there?
Yeah, absolutely. And, a lot of times you can drive by on a main street and see part of the facility, and perhaps there's a side road you can take to drive down. I've been to many of the facilities, driven by and looked, and I did that. I took pictures, write down the date. Take some pictures, right? If you can count how many are in a particular corral, try and do your best count and just write down, what you think you observe, so we can keep track of things. And if anybody's listening and you can do this, call the Cloud Foundation or call Wild Forest Freedom Federation, and we can try and, if you live in a certain area and you don't know the exact location of the facility, but you know that you kind of live near one, call us and we'll get the address to you. So,
excellent.
Or if you don't have it on hand, Ginger, I do, so they can call Wild Horse Freedom Federation. So.
That might be better, Debbie, because you already have the addresses of those, that would be good.
Excuse me,
I'm trying to lose
Wild
my voice.
Wild Horse Freedom Federation, on our website, there's a phone number there. Everybody can call and leave a message, and Carrie Fitch will get the message to me, or send an email.
Yeah.
Our emails are all on the Wild Horse Freedom Federation.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
The Canyon City facility here, Deb, as you know, is a Department of Corrections in Colorado, and they are not open except for tours once a month. A facility that was, where they sold a lot of horses to Tom Davis out of that facility.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, also, people could kind of drive by and maybe they'll notice a truckload of horses coming out. And if that's the case, I would say with your cell phone or whatever, get a picture of the Department of Transportation number on the door, the door of the cab. If you can get a picture of the license plate, get a picture of the truck. We can try and track what has happened, because my experience and all the research I've done, and FOIAs I've filed, things just don't add up on BLM's records, record keeping.
Well, let me just, if I could conclude about this caller, I queried Jesse pretty extensively and thoroughly about whether he, how did he assess the caller? You know, because we don't want to be raising this kind of red flag if it was just a crack, you know, caller, somebody who was a crackpot. But he said this person sounded very professional and knowledgeable, they would not give their name, but they are, you know, they said that they would attempt to get some hard documentation on this. So we have not received anything further, but it would be great to have some kind of paperwork, of course.
Yeah, and as you know, we've been trying to file a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests so we can get information for the public. And it can take over a year to get something. You know, we've basically, or what they send me is not what I asked for, or they've redacted it so heavily or something. You know, currently we have 5 FOIA lawsuits, Wild Horse Freedom Federation, and we still have other FOIA requests. We're having difficulty getting information for the public. And we will at some point soon be working on a project to post a lot of the FOIA documents we have on our website so that they'll be available to the public, because we've got a lot of smart people out there, and we want them to have access to this information. So, so Ginger, one big elephant in the room with all of this, I think, and I'm going to ask Katie about this later, if I'm not mistaken, there's language in this budget bill that the BLM can also euthanize excess horses on the range. Am I correct about that? Do you remember hearing anything about that?
Well, there's sale without limitation that's in this. The Burns writer has always had a language insert that negates the horse meat inspectors. And so that kind of rules out slaughter in the United States. Of course, John is, you know, 100,000 times more knowledgeable about this issue than
I
am.
Well, then
but the Act, does allow for the BLM to euthanize or to humanely euthanize horses. So that is in the Act, and it has never been done to my knowledge. But if you remember back in 2008, the BLM was having secret meetings that were uncovered through FOIA by Pat Haight with the Conquistador Project in Phoenix. And that was a revelation and revealed it through press releases, but the press never seemed to pick up on the enormity of this. Well, they're back.
And as I recall in those documents, they were talking about, you know, shooting horses and getting psychological help for their people because they were going to have to shoot healthy horses. And my concern is, one of my concerns, since this, you know, phone call dealt with short-term holding, what's going on with long-term holding where most of the horses are over 10 years old or they haven't been adopted? You know, could they just quickly be shipped out too, you know, quietly and quickly? So
well,
that's a concern
the majority
of mine as well.
Right. The majority of horses that are in holding, wild horses, are in long-term holding. And some of those horses are now in what are called, incorrectly, but they're called eco-sanctuaries. And those are people who have wild horses on their private lands, and the public can go on tours to see geldings in a field, hence my objection to the term eco-sanctuary. But I would imagine that those horses would be fairly safe. I mean, all of a sudden, if a tour is conducted and the horses aren't there, I would think that would be a big question mark. So, you know, they're not only in these kind of big ranches where we can't go, but they're also in some public viewing areas. I know there are 2 in Wyoming. And I don't know that there are others. I don't know that there are others elsewhere, but I can think of two for sure in Wyoming. So the horses in long-term holding are vulnerable. The Supreme Court Justice, her brother, helped me out with this, Deb, who wrote the book.
Dayton O'Hyde. Yeah, Dayton O'Hyde.
Not Dayton Hyde. No, it was
okay.
the Supreme Court Justice's brother. Maybe one of our callers can help us out here. I'm drawing a blank. But he had one of the first long-term holding facilities, and it was, I believe, in South Dakota. And it wasn't Dayton, although he's a contemporary of Dayton's.
Oh, I know why. It was Alan Day.
Alan Day, yes.
Alan Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, his book, The Horse Lover. Yeah.
Yes, and he was asked to shoot the horses when they told him he wasn't going to have a long-term holding facility anymore. And he did it, but I think it's probably haunted him every day of his life since. This is not, this is not the first time that a threat has occurred, but in my opinion, it's the biggest threat because it is the whole program. It's the entire horses in holding, and also horses on the range who could be disposed of.
The big elephant in the room is there are no excess horses. The BLM bases this claim about excess horses on their own skewed population estimates, on their appropriate management levels, the AMLs, which are not based on sound science. And just a reminder, in 2013, the National Academy of Science found there was no science-based rationale used by the BLM in allocating forage and habitat resources for all the uses and species. And last time I checked, looking at the BLM's own statistics, it was over 70% of the herd management areas didn't even have herd numbers high enough allowed to be viable. So they're either going to kill them off or push them to the brink of extinction, one or the other.
Extinction in a number of places already, where they're managed at 15 horses or 25 horses or 10 burros or something ridiculous like that.
There are many herd sizes like that. Yeah.
Yes. Not the majority, but there are some.
I looked at each and every herd management area. Yeah.
Yeah. The 26,700 that somebody came up with, I've always wondered, 26,700, where in the world did they come up with this incredibly low and terribly precise number? And so Ann and I were driving back the other day from the Priors, and I said, well, let's start doing some math here. There's 177 herds. If you multiply 177 by the genetic minimum of 150, Ann, what do you come up with? And I think if you look at this and do your division and multiplication, I think what they simply did, and I could be wrong, but this does work out, that works out to 150 horses per 177 herds.
Wow.
Now, that's... somebody out there who's listening can do the math, but there's 177 herds. It's 26,700 that can live in the entire western United States. And I don't know. I don't know whether that's how it was arrived at, but I mean that goes right to the heart of what you just said, Deb, about the NAS saying the BLM does not employ science. And in looking at forage allocation, which is how they create the appropriate management level, which is, of course, an inappropriate management level in many cases. Case in point, and this breaks my heart, I've spent some time now in the Red Desert of south central Wyoming. And in those herd areas, they are going to allow one horse every 1,000 acres. And it is the most beautiful horse country you've ever seen. The horses are beautiful, sleek, you know, plump, and it is just a heartbreaker because they're going to try to remove, you know, more than 1,000 horses, maybe mm-hmm. even 2,000 mm-hmm. horses. Those horses are doomed. If this mm-hmm. budget goes forward, and with this administration and this Secretary of the Interior, those horses are going to die
mm-hmm.
if we don't do something about it. And it's only the American public, in my opinion, that can make the difference.
I think so, too. What is the Cloud Foundation currently urging people to do?
Well, one idea, and this came from Daryl Smoliak, who's in, and I probably mispronounced his name, he's in, I believe, Minnesota.
No, you didn't.
Okay.
I love Daryl. He's so great.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And, you know, he reminded us that August, the entire month of August, Congress and your congressional representatives and your senators are at home. And while they're at home, they may be having town hall meetings, whether those are by a phone or in-person town hall meetings. Folks, you need to get to those town hall meetings and ask questions and have the wild horses have a voice. And you need to make an appointment with your senators and congressional offices when they're at home. There may be a person within a congressional office or Senate office that knows a little bit something about this issue. Most don't. That's why they just swallow the Kool-Aid and regurgitate it, and that's why we're in such trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
you'd be there to educate in a very polite and sensible way with facts and figures.
American Wild Horse Campaign has some great statistics on their website. They've done some good research. So if you look under issues, they talk about, for instance, this how many cattle outnumber wild horses on public lands. They have a lot of, you know, myths and facts, like what the BLM says, but what the real facts are. So I would encourage people, you know, there's plenty of look under their issues or resources on American Wild Horse Campaign. And, you know, print up some of those things. And you could even include that with a little letter and fax it to your congressional member if you can't go to a town hall meeting or, at the very minimum, make a call, you know.
Well, I think it's very important. Yeah. We have a graphic that's very graphic and easy to look at called What's Wrong mm-hmm. Here on our website. And it's really a fast fax and a chart and graph, and it's very simple. And when I'm at events, I hand these things out. But I think it's very important to try to establish a personal relationship with staffers and hopefully your congressmen and your senators. I know that mm-hmm. they've received a lot of calls, but believe me, these, particularly the Democrats I'm hearing, have swallowed the Kool-Aid. They believe that wild horses are starving on the range and that mm-hmm. the kindest thing to do would be to humanely euthanize them.
Well, yeah. That's...
So yeah. This has to be dispelled. What we're working with HSUS and others in doing is having photo galleries of each herd. And I know yesterday, you know, when I got to this, we worked on 20. We have 20 herds now in our Dropbox that will be mm-hmm. going to a national Dropbox. HSUS is going to set up a Dropbox for photos. And mm-hmm. These are photos of the herds in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, of course, with the Pryors, Anakie in Utah, and then a couple in Nevada. But we pulled those together very quickly out of our library of photos. So you can send things to us via Dropbox. If you have photographs that are fairly recent of the herds, particularly the herds in southern Utah, if there's anybody out there who can get to the herds that the Utah congressionals are talking about as being starving horses. I think it's probably BS, but certainly it would be great to have as many photo records as we could of horses on the range? Because they look beautiful.
Yeah.
My God, they look just beautiful.
Yeah, actually, about a year ago or so, I was going to go to Yellowstone, and a friend and I drove up from southern Utah to all the way to northern Utah. We actually went past Axtell. I went past another facility just to kind of take a look from the road and see what I could see. But the interesting thing was there was a lot of grass. It was pretty lush to me. I mean, I wasn't seeing, you know, I'm used to seeing drought areas, but, it looked lush what I saw. And think about it. Think of all the snow northern Utah gets and even southern Utah gets in the winter. So it would make sense that there would be a lot of forage. I just think
it's been pretty dry lately, and there have been, you know, big fires in the area. But, you know, these are resilient animals. They've learned to thrive. I just mentioned central Wyoming. I'm central south Wyoming. This is real horse country. It's just, you know, it can support a lot of horses. And Utah cannot support a lot of horses in relationship to south central Wyoming. But certainly it can support horses in bigger numbers than the little tiny AMLs. But, of course, when you're competing with livestock, and the livestock people want pretty much exclusive use of the land, then, you know, you come up with these tiny AMLs, and anything over, 50 is to be removed. And anything that's going to be removed right now, boy, I would not want to be a BLM person and have to say we're going to remove 1,000 horses right now. I did discuss this with the field manager in south central Wyoming, who's a really very nice man. And we talked about this very situation with one horse per 1,000 acres and having to remove so many animals. And I begged him not to remove any animals over the age of five. And he said he didn't really want to be him now. He didn't.
Yeah.
And I felt really badly that there are good people within the BLM who don't want to do bad things.
Well, I think that's why it's so important. Like, also, people can go to the Cloud Foundation website, and there's actually something they can print off to send to their congressional representatives with a note, you know, don't slaughter the wild horses and burros. So, correct? They can print that off, too, like a flyer?
Sure. But
good.
The very best thing to do is obviously to use your own words, be very precise in what you believe and want. And again, I would stress, and I know it's difficult for people if you don't feel adequate about being well-informed, but that personal call, that personal sit-down, that's worth so much. It's just worth so much. So
we
have to be personally involved.
I called my congressman's office, and it's actually not the first time I've called them, but first time in a long time, that I actually told her that I was vice president of a nonprofit and that we felt that BLM's information was skewed. And that I said, you know, and I'd like to drop off some information at your office. And she was, you know, she listened to my whole long phone call. We were on quite a bit. And, so she said, I look forward to seeing you. So, you know, if people don't want to set up an appointment, they can always drop by with a little letter or note. You know, they know if someone took the time to care to do that, they know it's important. And if enough people do it, you know, where the squeaky wheel is going to get oiled. So, Ginger,
you're absolutely right.
Can you stay on longer? Do you have some time to stay on longer today?
Sure,
I have
stay
to bring
on
our next
longer.
Guest up.
Certainly.
Okay. Maybe you might want to jump in at some point. But our next guest is Corey Golden of Return to Freedom. And Corey was great. He was on our last show with Netta DeMeo from Return to Freedom. And but was generous enough to call in today since he knew we were doing a big drive to try and get people to take action. Thanks for back being being back on our show again so soon, Corey.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, and it's a, you know, it's an important time, so it's important for all of us to be here and all of us to be working together.
Mm-hmm. What is some information you wanted to let our listeners know today? I mean, I know you covered a lot last week, and I want to remind everybody that the shows are archived, so if you missed Corey and Netta last week, you can go on Wild Horse Freedom Federation website and listen to the archived show. But, Corey, what's some of the stuff points you wanted to stress to our listeners today?
Well, I would stress, I imagine that you've touched on this a little bit. First of all, I would second everything that Ginger said about taking every opportunity you can to personalize your contacts with Congress, whether it's, you know, your phone call, you know, not just reading the script, but also telling them why this matters to you, or your an email, or if you even send a targeted message through our website or somebody else's website. If you can personalize it, and part of the reason for that is not just that it has a greater chance of getting in front of a congressman, but also because congressional offices have screening software that enables them, if they get lots of form letters, to just you know, check those off, and so they don't get read as much. So first priority would be to be calling often, and getting friends to call before these votes on Wednesday. And second, any way you can, you know, you can make those things personal. And third, anything you can do to, you know, to get your friends and neighbors and colleagues to make that call. It takes a couple of minutes. It's not intimidating. It's an easy thing to do once you do it. And, you know, it's really up to all of us now to make those calls.
Are there a couple of important subcommittee meetings on Wednesday? Can you tell us a little bit about the meetings on Wednesday?
Sure. Yeah. So just to be clear, I mean, we're talking about a handful of things, all of which are bad, basically. But in the morning, the full House Appropriations Committee will be voting on the amendments to the 2018 Agriculture Appropriations Bill. And every year since 2005, advocates have offered an amendment that prevents the USDA from spending money on reopening horse slaughter plants. And so that's a hugely important vote. And in the afternoon on Wednesday, the House Interior Appropriations Subcommittee will be voting on the Interior Appropriations Bill, and that contains the wild horse provisions that I'm sure you've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure Katie from a lobbyist for ASPCA is going to be on a little later in the show, and, you know, we'll talk about that. So anyhow, one thing I'm noticing is a lot of misinformation in the media, and that's not helping our cause, because not only it seems as Congress getting incorrect information or misinformation from the Bureau of Land Management with their skewed population estimates and their non-scientific basis for just about everything, it seems the same information they give to the media, and the media doesn't really do research and just regurgitates it. So, like, if there's an overpopulation of wild horses. So what are your thoughts on all the media misinformation?
Well, I think some of it is, you know, oversimplification. You have, you know, there aren't beat reporters that are assigned to wild horses, and so they go out there and they have a limited amount of time. The BLM is an official entity and gives them information and sells them its story. And I think you can end up with this oversimplification to say it's overcrowding, or one that in the NBC piece recently, which had some virtues to it, one of the things was, you know, saying that nobody knows what to do. And I think, you know, talking to Ginger and the other advocates, we've been, you know, saying for years that there are humane options, and there's a whole list of them. And so when you have a media report that says, A, there's overpopulation, and B, no one knows what to do, then, you know, it paints a very different picture. And as you and I talked about last time, you know, the people who are proponents of these changes that would be bad for horses often are couching them in language now that that puts them on the humanitarian side of things, right? They show a picture that they don't say where it's from, don't say when it's taken, of a dead horse, and say that horses are dropping dead all over the range. And it makes it paints the advocates as being sort of extremists who, you know, who don't know what's really going on. And exactly. And so, you know, and so they'll use the words like humane. They use sanitary words like euthanize instead of shoot. And so we talked about that a little bit before. But yeah, it's unfortunately, it seems to be that some of that is having an effect in Washington on people that you would count on as allies. And so we have to get on the phone and let them know otherwise.
Corey, Senator or Congressman Stewart, I think, is one of the key people who held up a picture from 2015 of a mare, starving mare with her foal trying to nurse, and extrapolates from that this is happening all over our ranges. And that's why we're trying to very quickly get these photo galleries up that will be available for Wednesday to show the committee and other members present that that was an isolated situation in which there was human interference that even caused the situation where she was starving. Mm-hmm. So, but you're right, Corey. It's easy, isn't it? It's easy just to believe from the media standpoint. Well, you know, they don't do their own investigation. They're not, you know, they're not investigative reporters. They're just regurgitating.
And it's not like they're showing an area like how they fenced off the horses from water, and the best water and forage in most of these areas, on the herd management areas. So it's not like anyone in Congress has asked that I know of, can you give us maps of every HMA and show us where all the fences are, and where the water areas are, so they could actually see what's going. You know, and it's like that one map I did, Ginger, when we were working on that mine, and we realized that there's two other mines close by, and the water drawdown was affecting almost the entire herd management area. So, you know, that's what we should be sending the congressmen, things like that. And also, I think it's a good idea if anybody out there has read an article that they liked, where it's actually sourced, you know, has good sources and everything, not just the op-ed, but something with, you know, some teeth in it for citing sources, I would send one of those with your letter or when you talk to a congressional person and just say, did you know this? You know, this is a consideration for what happens to herds on their herd management areas. So, you know, you can go to any of the groups. We've all posted articles about various topics and, you know, and there's a lot of information on all the websites, you know, so you can go and just pull anything. So if they start getting a lot of information from a lot of people and a lot of groups, then they go, maybe the BLM isn't telling us everything.
Well, the BLM created the sky is falling. The sky is falling. You would think that wild horses were on 100% of BLM lands instead of 11%. You would think that the budget was $1 billion when it's a paltry $70 million, which is a drop in the bucket in relationship to the Interior Department. That budget is roughly half of what Wildlife Services is in the Department of Agriculture, an organization that kills millions of animals, many of which are done at the behest of public lands ranchers. The BLM budget is for wild horses is not very big, and but yet it, the BLM has made it seem as if this is a major American crisis, which of course it is not. It's a crisis for those of us who value public lands, the outdoors, wild horses, and the rights that we have to walk on these lands, mm-hmm. to camp on these lands, to photograph on these lands. But Chris mm-hmm. Stewart and his ilk in Utah are part of a movement, which is, it's an old movement called the Sagebrush Rebellion back in the 80s. It's here to take over our mm-hmm. public lands by the states, and Utah is a, mm-hmm. Is the main player in this right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I'm going to jump in here because I know Corey, he's taking a friend to the vet, and he can't stay on really long today. So I have one more question to ask him before
sure.
I bring on Katie and John, who are waiting in the wings. So Corey, what is Return to Freedom urging people to do to save the wild horses and burros?
First and foremost, make that call. Call the representative. And even though we're talking about House issues now, call your senators. Call, mm-hmm. keep calling. You know, all the letters and things are fantastic, but we're talking about a vote that's on Wednesday. So really, this comes down to all of us making those calls and encouraging other people to call. And again,
okay.
you know, on this show we're preaching to the choir, but as you were saying in our last conversation, Debbie, it's really about, you know, each of us getting 5 friends or 10 friends to pick up the phone and make those calls.
Yeah. Well, I know, I hope you can stand as long as you can, Corey, but we understand if you have to leave, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on behalf of Return to Freedom. And Ginger, I hope you can stay on a little longer, too. I'm going to bring on our next guest, Katie Krasko, the equine lobbyist for ASPCA. And I know we've got John Holland on too. So, Marty, John Holland's the president of Equine Welfare Alliance. Why don't you put both John and Katie on live now too? Katie, can you give our listeners a brief, welcome to the show for one thing. Can you give our listeners a brief description? Can you give our listeners a brief description of some of the language in the budget that threatens our wild horses and burros?
Sure. So the stuff that concerns the ASPCA first and foremost is the quote-unquote unrestricted sales, because mm-hmm. that opens up mm-hmm. the selling of wild horses and burros to slaughterhouses abroad in Canada and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, wild mm-hmm. horses and burros cannot be sold for commercial slaughter, and we have fought tooth and nail to make sure that language stays in there, as I know all of mm-hmm. the other organizations on this call have. So we're trying to keep it in there, but that is the most concerning for us. The BLM mm-hmm. is estimating that they are going to save $4 million from selling horses to slaughter.
Meanwhile, the livestock industry puts our country in the red every year. The welfare ranchers on grazing their private cattle or livestock on public lands, you know,
exactly.
per decade. I think we go in the red $10 billion. So what's happening? You're the lobbyist. What's kind of happening behind the scenes? Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that? And by the way,
Isn't it crazy that I'm an equine lobbyist?
We have a lot of listeners from area code 202, and that's Washington, D.C. So if any of the BLM or Department of Interior employees would like to call in and comment, you're welcome to call in with any questions or comments you'd like to make. We'd be happy to address them.
What's happening behind
the scenes, Katie?
It's a busy time in Congress right now because it's appropriation season. That is when a lot of my work comes up. So we deal, like you said, I'm an equine lobbyist. Who would have thought that job even existed? It's amazing. So I work on 2 primary issues, wild horses and horse slaughter, and those two often coincide. This year they're coinciding more than I would like them to. So the appropriations process has been happening for a few weeks now. It will probably extend until July or August recess. After that, they're hoping to package up the bills that they have already marked up, the appropriations bills, and send them for a vote. So that's coming up pretty quickly. one of the things that I think is most important to talk about on this show is that the general attitude, you know, if you would have asked me a few months ago, you know, would Americans be okay with sending horses to slaughter, I would say no, of course not. 80% of Americans oppose horse slaughter. This is a completely untenable solution for wild horses or domestic horses. But unfortunately, I think that there has been so much bad news out of this budget proposal that it's hard to cut through that noise. People don't really know what to act on. And I want to encourage everyone to get involved as much as possible. Call your legislator, send them an email, you know, meet with your district offices, anything, to let them know that this is not a solution that the American people will stand behind. This is not okay. Because what we're hearing is that there hasn't been as much pushback as they had expected. I think everyone on the Hill was kind of bracing and expecting a lot of angry voices, and they have not gotten that.
Katie, it's Ginger. After the vote of the advisory board that I serve on, 9-1 or 8-1, to support the disposal euthanasia of wild horses, there was a big pushback on that. Do you think that there was a big pushback on that because there was a bit of a news vacuum? I'm a bit surprised to hear you say that there hasn't been a big pushback on this. That means that we've been very ineffective, I think.
I am just as surprised as you are, Ginger. It really, it's been tough, you know, and I know that people care. I know, I'm for a fact, everyone that I talk to about this, they're like, I cannot imagine that actually happening. But I think, like I said, there's just so much to worry about right now. There's just so much to be concerned with that it's really hard to cut through all of that noise, make our voices collectively heard. You know, it's possible. We just need a lot of engagement.
One idea I thought of, you know, even if there's a few advocates in any big city, you can type something up on an 8x10 piece of paper and go to Kinko's and for like $10, you make it like 3 feet by 6 feet, and you can go somewhere with a few advocates, organize a few advocates area, and go to a busy area, and you know, say call your congressman, don't slaughter the wild horses, and you know, or whatever, have some signs, get visible. We not only need you to
make a
phone
call. That's exactly right.
And you know, if you know the number of your congressmen in your city or a couple of them. You know, so all it takes is 5 or 6 advocates, and I know you probably know each other out there, a few in your city or nearby. Get together. Go to a busy area, you know, especially on a work day at noon or when people might be on their way to work, and, you know, be out there with your big signs that you spent, or even just draw it on a big piece of cardboard. It doesn't matter. Get out there and get visible, and we need it by Wednesday because we need a ton of calls. So, you know, instead of, you know, think, what can I do? Because if you think you're going to be crying when you hear, you know, tens of thousands of horses have been slaughtered, now is the time to take action. Be proactive. Just be a self-starter. Mm-hmm. You know, get together with two of your friends, even if you don't know any other advocates. Ask a couple of your friends if they'll go with you and, you know, hold a couple signs somewhere for an hour. Even for an hour, you know, we just need some visibility, something.
Yeah.
You know, try and think outside the box.
We have kind of a grassroots campaign going on right now. It's called Selfies Against Slaughter. So we are encouraging all of our members, and we have a horse action team, which I really encourage people to join. The people that run it are fantastic. They're my colleagues. And it's basically a sign that you print out that says hashtag Selfies Against Slaughter, and you can take a picture in front of a horse or with your pets or in front of the courthouse or any monument that's, you know, relevant to your congressman, and tag your congressman. I mean, that's the beauty of social media, is that there's no escaping it. You know, you can tag them as many times as you want to, on Facebook and on Twitter. So
that's a great idea.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. That's a wonderful idea, Katie. What do people do? They go to your website. and they
there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that we can do through the ASPCA. One thing is joining the advocacy brigade, and that's just on ASPCA.org/horse. Very simple. You can sign up that way. You can also sign up for our horse action team. So if you just type in ASPCA horse action team, sign up, and you will start to get emails about all horse-related legislation and things like that. We'll add you to the Facebook page, and we can reach out that way. And basically, it's a campaign all run through social media. So you take a picture, post it on your Facebook, tag us, tag your representative, your senators, tag as many people as possible, and then post it on your Facebook and tag a bunch of your friends that you think would be interested in doing the same.
Oh, that's great.
I did a piece the other day, and
this is on our website. It's the first thing you hit when you go to thecloudfoundation.org. But I did like a 10-minute selfie, and I'm riding my horse, and I'm talking about the issues and where we can do and what we can do. And so there's a number of links in that 10-minute piece, and it also goes with us onto the ranges in central Wyoming, so you can see how beautiful the horses are, and yet how overpopulated they are by livestock who are just trashing a water source. But so it's a 10-minute selfie.
That sounds like a good place to take a selfie.
Yeah, I know. I want to see that. Hey, Ginger and Katie, I hope you can stay on a little longer, but I'm going to bring John in now. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah,
we'll let
everybody here call in with questions a while after John talks. I just want John to get a chance to talk. He's been waiting on the phone patiently, and that way you can ask Ginger, John, Katie questions, and if we don't get callers, we have more time to talk. So, John, what are some of the things? You know, you're our expert on horse slaughter issues, so what are your thoughts on what's currently happening?
Well, I can tell you that I'm confused about one thing. Katie might have some idea on this, but I expected the GAO report to come out about 2 weeks before the vote. You know it's going to be a cooked report if history is any indicator. The last GAO report, if any of you don't know about the last GAO report, you very definitely need to Google how the GAO deceived Congress, because you'll get
isn't
a good.
Isn't that on your Equine Welfare Alliance website too? Can't they go there and
yes,
look at
it? Yes, it is, and it's on. There's a YouTube about it where it just leads you how they phonied the numbers.
Yeah.
The last
report
they dropped out.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. And the last report they put out about a month before the vote. Now, the trick with it was that they avoided any real data. They said things like, oh, everybody tells us you've got too many horses. All the experts and the veterinarians and the tribal chiefs all tell us, you know, but they didn't give any names, any data. I guess they felt it was necessary to have at least one data reference. So, in the introduction, they said that, for example, between 2005 and 2009, there'd been a 60% increase in abuse and neglect in Colorado. Well, that went past everybody. And it wasn't until I actually got the numbers from Colorado that I realized that they had used a date 2 years before the plants actually closed. And when you looked at the numbers, you could see why, because all of the increase took place while the plants were running. So it was completely falsified. Somebody should have gone to jail for it, but that doesn't happen in D.C. Lying is considered an art form up there. Anyhow, I would have expected the new GAO report to come out by now. And Katie, you got any idea? Have you heard any rumors about it?
I have not. I mean, I know that it was requested, and I know that it was supposed to come out at the end of June. And I mean, I have my own speculations. You know, maybe it didn't support the opposition's argument as well as they had hoped, and they don't want to release it, or maybe they actually haven't produced it that quickly, because that, I mean, the Government Accountability Office is, they try to do thorough work, I hope, you know, perhaps that's naive, but that is a really, really fast turnaround to do a research study of that magnitude. So maybe it's just taking longer than anticipated. I don't know. It's hard to call.
Yes, indeed, it is a very fast turnaround. But I suspect you may be right on the first count, too. And the reason is the first thing we did was go out to Colorado and say we need to update our numbers, since that was their flagship example of why you want to keep horse slaughter going. You know, we went out and asked and looked on the website, and the numbers were gone. So I did a telephone request, and was told that they had a computer glitch and lost all that data. Well, I'm a software engineer.
Wow.
I know that's absolute BS. You know, you got backups and backups and backups. You know, you don't have a computer glitch and lose 7 years of data. And then I actually did a FOIA request, and even they lied to me and told me it had been a computer glitch. So somebody on high didn't want those numbers coming out because they didn't show what they needed them to show. That's the only thing you can include.
Yeah.
And that alarmed me.
Hey, John.
Because now they're getting down to where they can control state data. They already erased data off federal sites. Anyhow, I do have some good news for y'all. Are you ready for some good news?
Yay.
Horse slaughter.
Are we ever?
The horse slaughter market is crashing. The number of horses going to Canada particularly, it hit a high of 3,326 in October of last year, and has had a precipitous decline until April was only 885.
Wow.
So it's had a 63% decrease. In average, you know, I think year over year, I have to check that number. I just got this report from Daniel. Daniel Fernandez is our expert that goes out and digs up all these numbers. And I want to thank him right here on the broadcast because he's done some amazing work. Anyhow, I haven't fully digested it, but overall, you know, we expected that the Canadian numbers would drop because of the quarantine requirement they put on Canada, the EU put on Canada. I guess you're all familiar with that. Required a six-month quarantine. We expected them to drop, but we expected that would push up the Mexican numbers, and it didn't. The Mexican numbers are down also very considerably, not that big, but 19.5%. year-over-year.
Wow.
So we're seeing a crash of the market for our horses, largely due to the fact that they finally figured out that they're not good to eat. You know, the wonderful report that Dr. Ann Marini put out in 2011, I think, about the safety of bute in horse meat, the presence of bute in horse meat, and many things that have come out since then. I think it's become pretty common knowledge that this meat is not raised. It's not raised to be meat. It's raised as sport horses and whatever. And then at the last minute, it's sold as meat as quote scrap value. And that fact means that there's no traceability along the way. The American horse industry is not about to put ear tags on their horses. They resisted any effort to put electronic tags in them, and so there is no way you can turn those horses into an acceptable agricultural product. I think that anybody making a phone call should say, well, the industry is crashing anyhow, so why do this and take a bunch of hits for something you can't save? Because one thing that Washington hates is failure. They like success stories, you know. And this industry is failing. There's no doubt about it right now. Now, whether or not that could be reversed, of course it could, I guess. But
well, John, can I ask you a question?
Sure, Ginger.
The BLM is trying to rapidly reduce the number of horses in holding and on the range. And my fear is that we're going to see roundups at which the kill buyers just arrive at the scene. The horses have received no chemicals, no shots, no nothing. Is that possible, do you think?
Yeah, that is an issue, although I think they have, sort of discounted the safety of quote, wild horses because they can't really, they have no traceability to really know that they've been wild all their lives. But you're right. I mean, theoretically, they could make an argument that this meat was safer than domestic horses. But the ability of the Mexican horse meat business to take advantage of it appears to be limited. In other words, their demand does not seem to be elastic. It didn't go up just because more horses were available. So it may not be easy to sell that many more.
Also, the horses that are most at risk, the wild horses that are most at risk of going to slaughter, are those that have been in holding for long periods of time, and those horses have received wormers and vaccinations and potentially sterilizations. And, you know, Butte is the problem. That's what everybody worries about. And if a horse has been sterilized, you know, we can assume that they've been given horsey aspirin probably. So those problems they're not limited to domestic horses. Those food safety issues are relevant to wild horses as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Ginger was talking
about going out on the range and getting them right off the range, but certainly any that have been in holding are basically domestic horses now from a chemical standpoint.
Yes,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. So that's the news I've got.
John,
Well,
that's a little bit of good news. When you told us that slaughter to Mexico was down 19.5%. What are the numbers, though? Do you have the actual numbers of how many were slaughtered in Mexico?
Yeah, 19.5% was the exports to Mexico. The exports to Canada, of course, down 63. And I'm trying to find an aggregate number.
I can get you an aggregate number in just a few minutes.
I think it's about 44%.
Yeah, something like that.
No, and that,
and as far as the number of horses
and burros, I'm wondering, you know, where
they lump them together.
Dow now. Yeah, okay. Well,
so
we'll
you're
let
talking
about that a second.
To Mexico, you're talking, you know, around 1,000 to 1,500 horses a month, sometimes under 1,000 this year. The last number was 1,452. And to Canada, mm-hmm. as I said, the last number in April was only 885.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Yeah. Well, that's only good news. I want to, we know our callers would probably like to ask questions, so I want to invite our callers to call in. I don't know. We've got a lot of listeners on the phone. I don't know if people are going to be able to call in. The phone board might be full. Is that the case, Marty, my producer?
Yes, it is. The board is full.
So people can't call in to ask questions then, is that
correct? No, I can't take any more callers. We've got 50 on board now.
There's a chat room, too. So if anyone wants to get in the chat room and type out a question for any of our guests, you could go ahead and get in the chat room and type out a question, and Margie will let us know and then ask the question. I also want to, at this point, bring in R.T. Fitch, president of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. I know R.T.'s been listening to the show. Marty, is R.T. live?
Yes, he is.
Oh, good. Hi, R.T.
Hey, greetings, everybody. It's been a great show so far. I'd really like to thank everybody for participating and bringing in such great information.
Yeah. Are there any topics we haven't covered that any of you can think of that we want to talk about a little more?
Everyone's brought to the table some very interesting points, starting with Ginger with the building the personal relationships with your local representatives. That's something that we've always tried to do and is very, very important. I love Caitlin's idea of tagging your reps, and I would take that even in social media. I'd take that even to a higher degree and take that all, run that all the way up to the president. And the continuation of the calls, one thing that we found back in the early years when we were doing roundups is we would and witnessing roundups is we really used the fax machine on the local level. In fact, during Twin Peaks, they got so tired of us frying their fax that they gave up. So emails are good, but I think if perhaps in the future we could consider some sort of fax day that would coincide along with a call-in day, that would have a lot of merit, because that literally puts them out of business. They can't deny it, they can't look away, but they can't do anything else but accept all of those faxes that the advocates are bringing in.
Well, and I have another idea. I think we should tag, you know, some celebrities like Justin Bieber. They have like a million followers or something. So I think if our listeners can tag celebrities, you know, it gets a wider audience. So that's something everybody can do that doesn't take long. You know, pick some celebrities, you know, Ashton Kutcher, you know, Justin Bieber, Beyonce, I don't know, just pick some celebrities and tag them so that more people know. Because a lot of people, you know, since the media is not really covering it, or there's kind of misinformation like the recent local NBC News segment that we saw that, again, perpetuates, so there's an overpopulation and whatever, you know, send them to some of these other websites for our organizations, put a link to it or whatever so people can find out, or just simply let them know, you know, the government wants to slaughter our wild horses and burros and domestic. So, you know, just write a quick sentence and you know, let them know. So,
Debbie, are there 50? RT, hi, RT. Ginger.
Howdy, howdy.
Do we really have 50 people waiting to ask questions? Is that what I mean?
No, we don't.
Oh,
we have
okay.
Callers. I can handle 50 callers on the board at one time, Ginger, and that includes you as a guest. So we have all the rest of these people are just listening by phone.
Okay. All right.
So we
don't
have any lines open for people to call in with questions.
Oh, that's too bad.
Right.
That's too bad.
Well, you know what? Maybe there's a few people out there that, you know, you are able to, if you've got a laptop or something, you can listen to the show on the link. So that might free up a couple of lines so we can get some questions in.
Say, Debbie, I do have one other comment.
Okay.
And it's an area we've never explored as far as making contact, and I do not want to sound like a sexist. We have three men, males, stallions or geldings online right now here on this call. But the advocacy is driven by women. And women have, I'll say this, and, you know, much to my detriment later on, but women are driven by love and compassion and the need for holding a family together. And as Ginger's often said, the situation with the wild horses has a lot to do, and in fact, everything to do with family and freedom. And without getting serious politics involved, we're at a juncture now with our current administration that we have several very powerful, intelligent women who have the ear of the president. And perhaps those women are the ones we should really be tagging and really making our plea, because women such as Ivanka and Melania are very, very family-oriented and very much so, I'm quite certain, have the ear of the man that does not seem to mind writing an executive order. Perhaps this is an area as an advocacy that we could work and compel other people to contact these ladies via either their email addresses or tag them or their Twitter accounts and say that we have got this situation where your children will never experience the joy of watching wild horse and burro families run free on their rightful range. It's an exercise that we haven't discussed, and I personally feel it has some potential, because if a woman puts her mind behind something, there's no stopping her. I'm married.
That's true.
Well, I like this idea very much, RT. And President Trump has been very supportive of the horse industry in Florida and has sponsored major horse events in South Florida. So I don't know whether Ivanka or, you know, President Trump.
Oh, okay.
So there's another kind of link, and maybe this is because of Ivanka, I don't know. But he's given out trophies and he sponsors these events. So I think there might be something to this.
It's certainly an avenue that we could explore, and if we ever had the chance of doing it, now's the time.
Yeah, especially before Wednesday, when those two subcommittees are meeting, or however many subcommittees are meeting Wednesday. You know, that would be great. So again, so John, Equine Welfare Alliance, what are you urging people to do?
Basically the same thing. You know, there's a limit to what we can do, but educate yourself so you know what you're talking about, and then contact your congressman and your senator. It's pretty much as simple as that. A number of years ago, we did a huge campaign. I think has already been mentioned, of faxing, and we did that on the slaughter issue once. You can get a fax program that allows you to fax directly from your computer, and it'll appear as a printed fax, and that can be effective.
Huh.
Although faxes are kind of going out as a technology,
right?
It's still worth the try.
Yeah. Well, and so here's the situation for everyone. We all know, everyone listening, that many, many tens of thousands of horses could be euthanized if this happens. It's better that we take action now. Katie said they think we don't care. They think nobody's mad. They haven't gotten much pushback. Now's the time to push back. Now's the time to call. Now's the time to get all over Twitter. You know, we need all of you. You're the only voice that the wild horses and burros have, and they need you for their survival. So I think we're all very united in wanting you to take action. Get everybody you know to take action, because you're the only one for the wild that they have. Each and every one of you. That's all the wild horses and burros have. Anyhow, we're getting about to the last 15 minutes of the show. I'm kind of sad we couldn't have any callers call in to ask questions, but, you know, just any of my guests, is there anything else you want to bring up right now? Or?
Well, I could mention, Val Hogsett has an organization. I think it's an Oregon-based organization, and I believe she's an attorney. Are you familiar, Debbie, with her she's brought allegations of it's not fraud. I don't have it called up on my computer right now. Stewart in Utah for lying to the American public and lying in a committee hearing.
Yeah, I think I saw that yesterday, and I think RT posted it on his blog straight from the horse's heart this morning. It's right under our radio show promo, so it's up there. But I'm even thinking about Dean Volstead. You know, and other people that seem to give false information all the time, and then they repeat it over and over again. It's like a talking point. Well, it is a talking point, and they stick to their talking points. But there's so much they omit, telling the public. And you know, we learned that early on, in several different ways, like how they teach, you know, train their wild horse and burro specialists. They are trained about talking points and what to tell the public and stay on their talking points. But the problem is for the American public, the BLM is omitting so much of what's really going on. And their website, and now, especially since all the state websites are gone, it's hard to find. They don't even have herd area maps up anymore on their new website, the new BLM website. So much of the history of the program has been erased, and they give so little information, and they're not transparent. They're not, you know, it takes forever to get a FOIA request. You know, they're not transparent. So that's what I'm seeing.
Well, and they,
you know, there's
they
a lot of problems.
Well, there are resource advisory boards all over the West, and the states are broken up into units, and people representing whether it's wild horse issues, largely it's livestock or mineral extraction or whatever, those boards no longer are functioning and have not been functioning for months, and neither is the National Advisory Board upon which I serve. We were supposed to have a meeting at the end of June in Grand Junction, probably. And we are no longer meeting. So there is no feedback,
public input,
or discussion or input of any kind, other than if you know somebody that knows somebody and you can call them up on the phone and find out what's happening. And now you're saying that there's a lot of information that's been removed from the website so that the history is erased.
Or the Internet.
You know,
Internet.
I think... Well, on the Internet, it's becoming more and more difficult. I think that people need to stress that these are our public lands. These are lands owned by every single citizen in the United States. And they don't belong to narrow public interests, and they don't belong to a specific politician. They belong to all of us. And, you know, you can open the window and yell, "I'm mad as hell," but instead of doing that, you need to pick up the phone and you need to be polite, but you need to say, "These are our lands and we want our horses to be there and we want them to be there for our children and our grandchildren."
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And I just like to continue to build on that, Ginger, and also what John said, and not only becoming knowledgeable yourself, but talking about this situation to other people. I just spent an extended amount of time out in Los Angeles, and I'm sure Debbie will back me up, is I would say 9 out of 10 people don't have a clue about the fact that we actually have wild horses and burros on public land. They don't know, they haven't been out of the city, and they don't know what it's all about. It's so important that we get the message out, and each person, every day, if you talk to 2 or 3 people and light them up and give them a web address or some place to go, any one of our websites, in an effort. I mean, people were dumbfounded years ago, and I'm a Texan, and when I moved here, I didn't know that 2 out of 3 of the U.S. slaughter plants were located in my state, and I loved horses. I didn't know that. It took people like John and Jerry Finch to educate me, and then I was dumbfounded, and so were my in-laws, and so were my brothers and sisters and everybody else. We've got to get the word out there, and just having it on our website, it's such a finite and small group. We've got to talk it. We've got to be out there spreading the word.
Mm-hmm. I was buying some dog food in Petco, and as I was checking out, you know, they asked if you'd like to make a donation. I said, well, I'm donating my money right now to try and save the wild horses and burros. The person goes, well, what's happening with that? So I gave her a little quick thing, and I said, you know, and right now, because of the budget, they want to slaughter tens of thousands of them, so we're trying to get people to make calls. She goes, I'll make a call. And so I handed her my card. I said, well, go to our website, and, you know, there's information on there, how to call and what to say. So so for everybody listening, you know, all of our – you know, any of the major horse advocacy organizations have information where to call, what to say. And it can be as little as one sentence. Hi, I live in, you know, in the name of your city, and please oppose the slaughter of wild horses and burros in the budget language or whatever. You know, it can be one sentence.
Absolutely. It can be a simple message. I echo what you said about, you know, the your buying of pet food and educating. I had a guy come to the office to give me a quote on painting the trim on the building, and he said we have wild horses. He said I had no idea we had wild horses. He was so excited. So we do need to get the word out. And if I can put just one more little punch in here, I will be at Briarfest. It begins next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So people come by and talk to us and get our information. Or if you know people who are in the Lexington area or in the Midwest, you know, tell them to come to that event, and we can talk to you. I'll be speaking on two times on Saturday and Friday and Saturday. So there's my pitch.
Okay. Katie, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
That's actually my hometown. I'm from Lexington.
Are you going to come?
Wow.
I don't think I'm going to make it back for that, but I might make it back for the National Horse Show that's happening a little bit later in the year. It's pretty busy for us in D.C. right now.
I know.
But I wanted to add, you know, if like right now I am sitting at a draft horse rescue that I volunteer at. So if you're connected, if anyone is connected, I'm sure that the people listening to this are connected to horses, you know, make that apparent when you're communicating to your legislator, whoever it is, that you know horses, you're in the industry, you understand, you know, their physiology, their biology, and you don't think that this is a good solution, because I think that expertise adds a lot.
And I want to bring up again, because some people may have tuned in later in the show, Ginger brought up a great point about if you know you live near an area where wild horses are, please, if you can take a few photos with your cell phones or whatever you can do to document the horses are there. And then Ginger, bring it up again. Do they send it to you, or there's a Dropbox, or they can load it to you?
HSU is setting up a Dropbox. Jillian Lyons is the horse person there at HSUS, and she indicated to me she's setting up a Dropbox. We have a Dropbox at the Cloud Foundation, and you can send it to me at my email address, or you can send it to info@thecloudfoundation.org. And if you have pictures of horses in some of these herd management areas where, you know, BLM and Congressman Stewart is making it like they're all starving and in need of quote-unquote rescue, i.e., killing them, then collect your pictures, send them to us if you have any, because visual proof is visual proof, you know, that they're...
Yeah.
They're it's so great here in Colorado right now, Wyoming, it's sickening to make the assertion that these animals aren't doing well. They're doing terrific.
Yeah, good. Hey, and I, Ginger, just really quickly, and I meant to ask you this earlier, but we got off on other subjects, and we're almost in the last 5 minutes of the show and have to wrap up, but I know you were in the Priors. Can you give us a really quick, we'll end on a happy note maybe, so could you give us a little update about the Priors?
Well, yes, the conditions are really good this year. There's been a lot of snow this past winter. There was some mortality because of a heavy winter, probably more so maybe than average, but every horse up there looks absolutely stunning. And if I'll try to get in my spare time, you know, I write stories about the trips that I take there, so look for one coming up. And maybe I'll call it Matosca Rising. Cloud's son got his first mare. He's just a little five-year-old, and he's gotten a 17-year-old mare, and she loves him. So it's just wonderful. He battled against eight different bachelors who tried to capture her, but he was the winner, so he's much like his father, Cloud. And we can stay tuned. We've got great pictures of this.
Okay. Well, we're kind of going to wrap up here. I'd like to thank all of our guests for taking the time to be on Wild Horse and Burro Radio today. Ginger Catherines of the Cloud Foundation, Corey Golden of Return to Freedom, Katie Kroska with ASPCA, John Holland, Equine Welfare Alliance, and R.Q. Fitch with Wild Horse Freedom Federation. Be sure, visit the websites for all these organizations and our Facebook pages, and we're going to keep you up to date as things happen. So, you know, get on the mailing list, whatever you need to do, so you can get email alerts. But the horses, wild horses and burros need your voice for survival. And we are, that's why we're all here today. We're asking you for to take action. We need you to get mad, take action. I want to also thank our producer, Marty Oakley. Marty's been producing our radio show for over 3 years now. As a matter of fact, John Holland was my first guest well over 3 years ago. And Marty, not only does Marty have a radio show called Whistleblowers on TS Radio, she does on she hosts on Thursday nights. She's been invited and is hosting a panel at the Whistleblowers Summit in Washington, D.C. on July 28th. So if anybody's in the Washington, D.C. area, it's going to the Whistleblowers Summit. The theme of it this year is on the environment and wildlife. So,
wow.
You know, if any of you would like to buy a ticket and go, it's at the end of July. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a lot they get a lot of the a lot of people going through there. There's another show on TS Radio on Tuesday nights, Calling Voices, Caring for Animals, hosted by Debbie Dahmer. So anyhow, that's I'm going to let any one of you. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left. Make our closing statements and thank our listeners. So, anybody want to pick that up? Hello?
Yeah, well, I'm here.
Well,
go ahead,
Jim. Yeah, RT, I'd like to say thank you very much, RT, for and Debbie, for coming up with the idea of doing a radio show like this. And I hope that that we can, you know, really build a bigger audience. But my closing remark would be, if you want wild horses to live in the West, wild and free, you better darn well pick up your phone and call your congressional representative and call them every day, twice a day if you have to, and develop a relationship, because this is the only way I believe that we're going to save them.
And I
yeah,
have to agree. And in doing so, let's also remember a very important voice. We're going to have to speak a little louder because we lost our good friend and the friend to all the animals, Hope Ryden, over the last week. So
yeah,
we need
that's
to
right.
speak louder now.
Okay.
This is Katie, and I want to say that I really appreciate this too. It was great to be on here, and I'll just reiterate something I said before. Join the Horse Action Team. We have all of the information. We make it very easy for you to get in touch, find out where your district offices are for your senators and your representatives both. So first and foremost, meet with them. That makes the most impact. If you can call, do that. If you can write a letter, do that. Anything and everything, but developing a relationship is crucial. So thanks for bringing that up, Ginger.
Great.
Thanks.
Well, thanks
for what you're doing.
Lastly, I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today. You know, we do these shows for you to get information to you, and so that, and we'll be having all of our guests on again so that you can call in and ask questions at a future show. So, you know, we'll be having all of these people on our show again if they'll come back on. Thanks everybody, and have a great day. And thanks to all our guests.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.